Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
From a competition to a pleasure hunt and all the stops in between, we cover it all here at Coon Hunting Media.
Outlaw Light Company, owned by Alan Roberts, located in 10 Mile, Tennessee, 25 years of light building experience, with the newest addition to their lineup, the Ace Pro. They are constantly striving for the best parts. The Ace Pro has better switches and batteries, and it has the option of double walk light and two additional color modules, main beam and a green laser, or a single walk light with three color modules, main beam and a green laser. All their lights are known for dependability and extreme brightness. Contact Outlaw Lights for their complete light selection. Their direct business number is 423-453-8813. The Ace Pro, the light with a lifetime warranty.
Briar Creek Kennels, feed and hunting supply store, owned by Chris Girth, located in Hemera, Indiana. Briar Creek carries all your pet supplies and is the headquarters for all your hunting dog gear. Never get caught in the dark. They carry Outlaw Lights, Superior Lights, and their own Briar Creek Light brand. They are an authorized Garmin and Dogtra dealer. They offer hunting apparel by Yoder Nylon, Southside Hunting Gear, Dan's, Razor, and their own Briar Creek branded gear. Dog boxes include Old Dry Pond and Diamond Deluxe, AGM thermals, engraved nameplates, dog collars and leads are just a few of the many other offerings you can get from Briar Creek. Visit the store in person or shop online at www.shopbriarcreek.com or check them out at the major events. Their direct business number is 812-383-9489. Briar Creek Kennels Feed and Hunting Supply Store.
All right, everyone, this is the Coon Hunting Media Podcast. This is Kyle Oakes, and I'm sat down with Johnny Cooper and Jason, and we've got a little different episode today, but it's a very important episode talking about the cause of St. Jude. But before we get in this episode, Johnny's got the verse of the week.
Okay, I got Romans chapter 12. I'm going to start reading in verse number 4. It says, "For as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office." I chose this because of the St. Jude hunt. We are all coon hunters. We are all pursue the game, but this is a worthy cause for us all to come together as a member in one body to try to help these kids out in these hunts and try to get the medical attention that they need. But all of us as coon hunters can come together and support a great cause with this hunt.
All right, good deal. This is going to be a little different podcast than what Coon Hunt Media, I guess, is kind of set up for. But I know Kyle's had a lot of messages come in from hunt organizers and stuff. And we've talked to several people, and they're like, "Hey, get some awareness out there for this hunt." So we got to thinking, what could we try to do? And we've got a couple different things lined up here that we've worked on over the past week, and get this one aired out for this coming Thursday.
Because this is one of the things that we kind of opened my eyes on is just how much this hunt has helped St. Jude. And when we get in a couple of these interviews, you'll be able to see, get some of the numbers and stuff. But it's done some pretty big things.
It's done some very big things. So the hunt itself, I don't have the numbers or the notes in front of me right now, but it started, was it 74? It was in the 70s, I think 74. But this thing's been going on for a long time. We've strategically got a hold of some people and got you some insight on this. But there's a lot of effort that goes into this hunt every year. And that was one of the things we took away from it is one of the people we talked to, when they finish this hunt up and this event up, they're going to be done for a few, maybe a month or whatever, and take a break. Then they're going right back to work starting for next year. So this is not something that's put together overnight. It's something that they work year round, and come like January 1, they go wide open to getting everything ready for the event that'll be put on. So what we are going to be talking about, it's going to be for the St. Jude benefit hunt that's coming up. And for those of you that are not familiar with it, it's held at the Decatur County Fairgrounds out in Parsons, Tennessee. It'll be this coming weekend. It's April the 11th, 12th, and 13th. So the big meat of it happens on Friday and Saturday. They have an opening ceremony and a free dinner on Thursday night. But then on Friday and Saturday, they got stuff just pretty much going on. You'll find something to do at any time of the day.
Yeah. What's the label on the flyer? What's the world's largest coon hunt?
It's been labeled for years and years as the world's largest raccoon hunt benefit for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. They still have a good turnout. It's probably not got as much recognition as it used to in the past few years. We want to bring some more awareness to that and try to get it back out there.
Yeah.
We would like to see a lot of people attend that or work toward money that goes for the same cause as what they've got going out there.
Yeah, also, I thought it was always just the Memphis campus, and that's not the case. There is several other places that are affiliated clinics with St. Jude. There's places in seven different states that actually with this hunt would help benefit them. And us as Coon Hunting Media would like to challenge maybe some of the club members or presidents of some coon hunting clubs in this states that I'm going to read off to get in touch with some of these people and help put on a hunt for this St. Jude's hunt, and they can take the money to the St. Jude's hunt and turn it in down there. And those places are Tulsa, Oklahoma has a clinic, Springfield, Missouri has a clinic, Shreveport, Louisiana, Peoria, Illinois, Johnson City, Tennessee, Huntsville, Alabama, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They all have clinics that are affiliated with St. Jude. So if you're a club president or a club member and would be interested in trying to put on a hunt for this benefit, then to get it all counted for the help of the kids, then it'd be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I kind of just got to thinking it'd be cool to have one like in the Southeast region, Northeast region, Northwest region, just have four or five of big St. Jude coon hunts all over the country.
No, it absolutely, that'd be cool. Absolutely would. And so we won't get into all the details of these interviews, but when you start listening to these interviews that we're going to segue into here in a little bit, there has been some major money raised by these events. Local, we think about our clubs at the local level can't do anything. Well, that's definitely not the case. We just got to rattling off in one of the interviews with a handful of clubs that does something every year. And one of our local clubs, Van Buren County Coon Hunter Association, they do this every year. But them and a handful of other ones that he mentioned to us in one of the interviews, we're in a $30,000 range coming in this year. So it's worth the time.
Yeah, and these are local clubs.
Yeah. This is the clubs you go to on Friday night, Saturday night, and hunt your dogs when you're not going to these nationwide events or whatever I'll call them that we hit. But this is the local guys that you go out and hunt with at your local club. That's who's raised this money, and it's a lot of money.
Yep.
Definitely makes a difference in these kids' lives.
So one of the things, we'll give you a little insight of how this episode's going to run. We've interviewed two different people. We wanted to give you two different aspects of St. Jude. We wanted to sit down and interview a person. Not that I wish this on anybody, but we do have someone that's in our local community that has lived the life of St. Jude. They've had and currently have a child that's receiving services through St. Jude. So we were able to sit down, get a one-on-one perspective of what does St. Jude's actually, or what does St. Jude actually offer to a family, and what kind of services do they do? So we did that interview with Mr. Ali Baji, and he did a great job explaining what goes on down there and what kind of service he's received, his family's received. Then after we got done with that, we have actually just got off the phone with Mr. Doug Mooney, who is actually one of the board members that puts on this event. He's been working on this since the very early 80s. So he believes in this organization, believes in this cause. So what we'll do is we'll segue into a couple different interviews that you can get some firsthand perspective of the service, and then you're going to be able to get firsthand perspective of what to expect out there at the event itself.
Yep. So I guess without further ado, the first interview is with, what's his name again?
Ali Baji.
There you go.
And he works with your wife, Johnny, with Nora. So it's somebody she's around every day. So she knows the ins and outs, yep, to what he's went through. So she can attest to some of the things that he told us of what they do there. But it was really mind blowing what they offer these kids. So we'll do that, and you'll listen to that one. Then we'll be back with you in a minute.
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, guys, we are going to sit down with Mr. Ali Baji from the Cookeville Regional Medical Center. That's where he works at, and we're going to discuss with him some real-life experiences with St. Jude. So we really appreciate it, Ali, that you were willing to sit down with us. And for the listeners out there, like I said, he has experienced and lived the life of someone that's been at St. Jude and had a loved one there. And a lot of connections there. So Ali, he works at Cookeville Regional Medical Center along with Johnny's wife, Nora. He's also a city council member here in Cookeville. And we were just talking before we got started. His mother was Johnny and myself's kindergarten teacher a lot of years back. So Ali, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
All right, good deal. So what we'd like to do is there's a large event coming up. We're April 11th, 12th, and 13th in Decatur County, Tennessee. It's called the St. Jude's World's Largest Coon Hunt. It's a large event where they have an actual hunt, bench shows, live entertainment, and so forth. And this is something that's been going on for many, many years. Started out in 1976, if I've got my dates correct. The Decatur County Coon Hunters Association got with the JCs of Decatur County and wanted to start this event up to raise money. So this thing's been going on since at least 1976. And in that time frame, if I've got my numbers correct, they have raised over $5 million that have went to St. Jude's. Absolute phenomenal hospital and organization of what they work on and do out there. A lot of other small events have been taking place around different states, but even here locally, one of the local clubs in Van Buren County, they do something each year and have a St. Jude benefit. And I think Johnny and I was trying to talk about that earlier today. I think they're averaging between $4,000 and $6,000 a year that's raised just here locally for that. So we wanted to bring some awareness out of this event that's coming up, and also just a lot of the efforts that go forth for good causes that are being put out there by the hounds people around the country. So we'll jump right in. If you guys got any questions or anything, Kyle and Johnny, we'll do that. But we really want to let you kind of tell us a little bit about what your experience has been. So we'll start with tell us how you came to be acquainted with St. Jude and how your family got involved, because I know that's a story in itself too.
Yeah, my son, tennis player, cross country player. And so he just very active and that kind of thing. And we went to Universal and we were running around barefoot, you know, on a concrete slab all day at one of their water parks. And, you know, he noticed a little bump, and we just assumed it was muscle. And, you know, it just was there, you know, week after week, and it's like it never resolved. And we decided, let's go ahead and see somebody about this. And we went to a friend of ours, mutual friend of ours, and, you know, who had an orthopedic background. And he was concerned, so he ordered x-ray. And then, of course, the x-ray revealed our biggest nightmare. Mm-hmm. And then followed up by an MRI. And we, you know, that in itself is a blessing and a completely, that is a God story right there. How we had the right person at the right time, mm-hmm. with the right connection to get us plugged into St. Jude. And we also had advice and guidance too, because as a parent, the first thing you want to do is, let's do something now. Let's, you know. Mm-hmm. And we paused. And within 24 hours, he reached out to his contact at St. Jude, and the doctor who is over that osteosarcoma program at St. Jude was actually in Vietnam and responded to an email from Vietnam accepting us into the program. And then we, you know, within a week we were down there and, you know, got more x-rays, work up, and kind of got plugged into the St. Jude thing, got kind of an indoctrination on, you know, what to do next. Mm-hmm. And so we came home for about another week or so until they got him into the system. You know, we had to go down and get a biopsy and all that, wait on the pathology. Once we got the pathology back, knew exactly what type of cancer it was. Obviously, we were hoping it was some benign tumor, but unfortunately, that wasn't the case. We got down there and prepared for a long visit. And during that time, too, you know, they were still doing COVID protocol. So I had a limit. I could only be there for 5 days. So that was really a struggle.
So you had to come in and out.
I had to come in and out. So initially, I was able to be there for the initial visit and that kind of thing, come back. And my wife, Michelle, stayed there with Reagan. They had temporary housing until long-term housing opened up. But, you know, they did provide housing, and they, I mean, they're just a phenomenal organization. They provided housing for them, allowed me to stay there, you know, for a couple nights, and of course I had to leave. Mm-hmm. And then during his surgery, short, you know, a couple months after that, then he had his surgery to remove a large section of his femur and some bone and that kind of thing. And so I was able to stay with them at the hospital for that. And of course now they've released their COVID restrictions.
Correct.
So, but yeah, they provided housing for them, and then they have what's called a concierge service. You know, helped Michelle move to the long-term housing, which is off campus. And so we were able, they were able to get moved in there and without me having to go back and forth.
So they helped take care of the moves, mm-hmm. and so forth. That's okay. Right. Now, when you talk about housing, concierge service, travel and all those things, what's that cost?
Well, they actually, you know, they give you what's called, it's a CLIN card, and what they will do is they actually reimburse you. It's like a debit card. Mm-hmm. So as far as mileage, those types of things, they'll just put that on the CLIN card to kind of help with that.
And that's why I wanted to bring that up, because that's the way I understood my understanding of how that worked, is they help cover all of those, mm-hmm. expenses. That's, yeah. It's not your typical local hospital stay or your specialist stay or whatever, there, because you're getting into something that's running into hundreds of thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. in Absolutely. The normal world. So It is a phenomenal organization. So you guys, from the time you made your contacts in about a week's time, mm-hmm. you were in the system.
We were in the system and we were rolling. We were, you know, hitting every milestone at that point. And they give you your treatment plan, and it's like, you know what you're going to do, at what date, when your surgeries are, your treatments, and as long as your body recovers and that kind of thing, you know, there's just no delay in the next treatment. You know, you should be able to stay on schedule, which mm-hmm. we were able to do. I think we had to delay a few times just because, you know, we had to wait on his numbers to come up.
Okay. Well, now, obviously, you being in the medical world already, just from an outsider looking in, I think Cookeville Regional is a great hospital. You start moving into specialties and so forth. Let's talk Vanderbilt's or St. Thomas's, and just for us locally, you've got all of those to compare. How comfortable are you that you received that treatment and you went to St. Jude's versus one of these places? I mean, how do you feel the level of service and expertise is?
Well, we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and I think one of the biggest takeaways are, and nothing to take away, because Vanderbilt Children's is a phenomenal organization.
It is.
You know, all these places, you know, East Tennessee, all Children's, mm-hmm. also a phenomenal organization. But I think for us, I think with the type of cancer that Reagan had, you know, there was the right fit. They were able to cater to us. They, you know, we were comfortable. They made sure that not only Reagan's needs were met, both medically, but also mentally, mm-hmm. you know, and because, I mean, that's a huge ordeal. You know, at the time, he was 13 years old, so he had his 14th birthday getting chemo.
Yeah. So I couldn't imagine that as a child receiving that news, and at the same time, I have no idea how to even start to think how you as a parent felt dealing with that. That's something I thank God I've never had to deal with, and I pray that I never do have to deal with that. That's a tough situation for any parent or child to be placed into.
It's the toughest thing that I've ever done, and I've been deployed overseas. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of things in my life, and that by far is the most difficult emotionally, because there's nothing you can do. You're out of control. It's out of your control, and you just, it really drives you to your knees. And but you know, St. Jude really, as much as possible, became family to us. I mean, you have the same care team. And then they have social workers, you know, to make sure that you have everything that you need. They have child life specialists. They have what's called patient commons area, where there's no clinical staff allowed in that area. So it's just geared toward patient and family, just to give you a break.
Normalcy in your And that was one of the questions as well. So they even go that far as trying to keep things normal.
That's right.
For these.
That's right. They
patients have, and families.
They have a music room. They've got art, you know, so that you can actually do activity, do projects and things like that. So you have something to look forward to instead mm-hmm. of something to be waiting, you know, waiting on that next treatment.
Okay.
And so they've got a lot of really good equipment up there. And two, from a school perspective, you know, they are involved and plugged in. They have an entire school with a principal. They have teachers and different grade levels and things. It's almost like a private school, you know, where you're not switching classes, but, you know, you go up in there, and then they have qualified teachers, you know, who are probably, you know, they worked in the public school system or something like that. And, you know, so they're credentialed, they're certified. And, you know, we were plugged into the 504 program, which means that they work with the school district mm-hmm. and ensure that your child is reaching all the academic milestones through their stay. So, you know, as far as The only thing that he didn't do was state testing, but he was, you know, able to keep up with his coursework. He's in honors classes, mm-hmm. so, you know, we needed to, you know, they were even able to accommodate that
so,
as well.
So while he was out there, like, if I'm understanding that correctly, like, that 504 plan, they were working with the local school system.
That's
with,
right.
Okay, that's even... I wasn't aware of the detail that they do for the school and yeah. so forth. So I'm very, my wife's in education as mm-hmm. well. Most of her family is. So I'm very versed in hearing those conversations from a distance. So, yeah. so those 504 plans, the fact yeah. that they're on the other side of the state and they're working with the local school districts back here
yeah.
to make sure you're staying on track and doing, I didn't know idea they
even
did
doing
that.
The same assignments.
Wow.
So
when that's pretty impressive.
So after we were able to get him home by Christmas, and so when he started back to school in January after the Christmas break, he was able to just cruise right on.
So
there.
He's not behind.
He's not behind.
While he's been out, right. out of, okay, that's very impressive. Just understanding how easy it is to get behind in the school system, mm-hmm. and knowing that someone or that organization's working with this organization here in our educational system and keeping them up to speed. That is good. So they've got as many what are some of the other things, or is that anything else you can think of that they do to try to keep life as normal as possible for these kids and stuff while they're out there?
Well, there's always activities, and there's always some outside organization that comes in. We have you know, at the long-term housing, you know, they had teen rooms, you know, age-appropriate rooms, you know, where there's stuff to do with, like, you've got all your video games, things like that. They have music room that actually has acoustic guitar, piano, things like that. So depending on, you know, what you're interested in, you could probably find it and be able to do it. And then there's also kids of the same age group there as well. So, you know, they were able to make connections and that sort of thing with families, make friends and contacts. So there was people, kids of the same age there as well.
Okay. Now, before we wrap up, is there any other that you can think of, or you'd want to mention any other type of supports or whatever they have for parents, or have you kind of touched on most of that already?
Well, I mean, for the parent, that the same resources they have for the children, they also offer for the parent as well, because, you know, the parents are struggling as mm-hmm. well, and so they do offer that. They offer spiritual services for both the children, you know, depending on what your faith is. They have those chaplains there as well.
Okay.
And just to kind of wrap up in summary, you know, I've never, you know, you always, you know, you give to organizations and that kind of thing, and you kind of never really know if, you know, what happens to that. And mm-hmm. I can tell you, this is, you know, being on the receiving end of their care, this is one organization that does exactly what they claim they do, and then some. I mean, it's just over-the-top care for the patient and the family.
I think that's a good way to sum it up, if they're doing what they say they will and then some. Because you're right, when you donate or do those things, you never know with most mm-hmm. most places. And I have personally never heard anything negative about St. Jude. I've always heard the good, and I thought this would be very interesting to sit down with, you know, with someone who's experienced it, been there, done that, and can, you know, speak, you know, firsthand of what they do there. So our group thanks you for really appreciate you sitting down with us and going over this. We want to get this thing aired. It's, I think we'll probably try to do this one next with our next week. So that event's coming up. It's a good time. People can go out and enjoy themselves April 11th, 12th, and 13th. There'll be, like I said, live entertainment and everything. It's the entire town kind of sets up around this event. And like I said, since the 76 inception of it, have raised over $5 million. So that's pretty good for just a lot of local people coming together and doing that. So, again, thank you, Ollie, for sitting down and going over this with us.
My pleasure. I appreciate it.
Dakota Lock Company, owned by Hoop and Tater Franklin, located in Tellico Plains, Tennessee, with the newest addition to their lineup, the Dakota Express, This light features the industry-leading TrueDual battery pack cap light. Switching from battery 1 to battery 2 is a simple flip of a switch. Contact Dakota Lights for their complete light selection. All of their lights are known for dependability and extreme battery life. Their direct business number is 423-261-2551. Dakota Lights, great lights, and even greater customer service.
Dillon's Electric Company, owned by Ricky Dillon. Located in Crossville, Tennessee, Dillon's Electric offers a wide range of electrical service, from small jobs to large expansions, from new construction to electrical repairs. Give Ricky a call at 931-287-4761. Dillon's Electric, a quality you can always trust.
Okay, now we're welcoming you back. Now that you've got the interview part with Mr. Ollie Bocci about the patient care and things that St. Jude does, we're going to give you an event of the things that you can help expect at the St. Jude Benefit Hunt.
Yeah, so what we're going to do now is, like I said, we just got off the phone with one of the chairpersons and a board member down at the St. Jude event itself. So we spoke with Mr. Doug Mooney, and he's going to go through in this interview, and he's going to tell you what you can expect. You'll get to kind of see what happens during the weekend down there, auctions, food, live music. When it comes to the Coonhounds, there'll be water races, bench shows. They'll have, when they first start, they'll have ladies-only hunts, a youth-only hunt. There'll be money has been raised. There's going to be Calcuttas where you can buy dogs and stuff for the hunt. So it's a whole lot of stuff that's going to be able to be done while you're down there this weekend. So we'll jump over, let you listen to that interview, and hopefully get some people excited about wanting to participate and be part of this St. Jude event.
Yeah, that'll work. We'll be back, catch back with y'all here in a minute.
Oh, this is Johnny Cooper with the Coon Hunting Media Podcast. Me and Jason and Kyle sitting here, and we have a special guest with us today, Mr. Doug Mooney, who is a board member of the St. Jude's Parsons, Tennessee hunt. He's one of the 7 board members that's on the board about this hunt, and we're going to do an interview for him and see how the hunt runs, how it operates, and some of the things that goes on, not just for coon hunting aspect, but the benefits and the auction and things that they have there also for to make it all inclusive for everyone.
Doug, this is Jason. We do appreciate you sitting down and spending a little bit of time this afternoon, taking away from your time to talk about this for us. Like I said, we want to just jump in and ask you some questions and let you give us a little personal insight on this event as a whole.
Yes, sir. We thank you all for helping us out.
All right. Thank you. So we'll jump in there. Who wants to start? So we'll start with a little bit of high level stuff. So Doug, what we're going to do is we actually already sat down the other day and talked with someone. So we wanted to highlight this event, and we want to do it from the Coonhound and coon hunting standpoint. But we wanted to just talk about what the actual organization does and the hospital does. So last week we sat down and did a short interview with an individual who's lived that life at St. Jude. They've had a child there. So we've got that, and then we wanted to sit down with you, talk to you a few minutes, get this aspect of it, and then we're going to try to tie it all together. We may make a mess of it. We're going to try to put it together. So we want to bring awareness to it and hopefully get more people involved with going out there to this event. So start off, we're definitely talking about it's the St. Jude benefit hunt that's going on in Parsons this coming this week. I mean, time's getting away from us now. We started these interviews a week ago. But we have a lot of local clubs and stuff that's actually – well, some local clubs here that get involved, and they raise money for this every year as well. I think some of them will bring the money down that was raised this spring to that event. But just St. Jude's in general, tell us why and how long you've been involved with this.
I've been involved since 1982.
1982, yeah. So you've been in this for a long while.
Long time.
What have you seen over the years with this event? Is it held pretty steady, or has it grown? Has it decreased? What have you seen?
Our dogs has fell off through the years, but as they have fell off, we have picked up other things that has helped along. We have so much stuff going on down here, on the grounds and off the grounds, supporting counties around us and states, that has kept us at a steady pace. Even though, like I said, the dogs just went down, but I think you'll find that at any local hunt. I know our local hunts is down from what they used to be. I'm sure y'all's are too.
Yeah, noticed quite a bit of downfall on the hunts recently around here, but they're starting to pick back up quite a bit. We're getting several dogs in the woods now compared to what they used to be, and I think part of that has to do with the UKC deal that they've got going on with the Tournament of Champions and stuff. A lot of dogs coming out of retirement and doing and hunting for those things. But one thing we'd like to talk about when we start talking into this, we know that we have the coon hunting aspect of it as far as the night hunt. We also have a bench show part of it. And if you don't care, tell us kind of how that it works.
Yeah, we'll have a bench show on Friday morning, a bench show on Saturday morning. I mean, it's just like a two-part hunt. It's just like a two-night hunt, more or less, with a bench show and a night hunt each day.
Okay.
And the bench show, like I said, starts around 9 o'clock of a morning and goes till whenever. And then we'll have other stuff during the day going on. And then we'll start the night hunt about 4 o'clock.
Okay. Y'all also have water races and things like that also, like field trial type things?
Yes, sir. That's one of the things that goes on between the bench show and the night hunt. We'll have a water race, a tree and contest, starts about 11 o'clock, and a tree and contest to follow the water race whenever it ends. And on Saturday, we'll have an auction that starts about midday and goes till we run out of items to sell. And during these days and while the coon hunters are gone at night, we have entertainment, live bands Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. We've got all kind of concessions with fried catfish, barbecue chickens. We have barbecue, hamburgers, hot dogs, whole nine yards. I mean, if people's looking for something to do that don't even have nothing to do with the coon hunt, you come after 5 o'clock, you might not even see a dog. All you'll know is we've got entertainment and food.
Okay.
So, Doug, this event, I'm looking at the schedule here from the what's been posted out there. So you guys actually start Thursday, so there'll be an opening ceremony. It says at 5:30, and then free white bean supper after that. So I guess that's when this all kicks off, and it says you have a hound auction going on for the ladies hunt. Then it says draw cast for youth hunt, ladies hunt. So is that first night, is that strictly a kid and ladies hunt?
Thursday night is actually like a welcome thing. There's the youth hunt and the ladies hunt is not licensed. It's just fun trying to get young people involved, the women involved. The women actually brings in lots of money because they get out and they draw sponsorship money, and whoever brings in the most sponsorship money wins a sponsorship award, which consists of a jacket, a nice embroidered jacket, and for the woman that brings in the most sponsorship. And so the ladies brings in lots of money. The youth hunt, it is just designed to help our kids. I mean, this is for kids. This whole event is St. Jude is for the kids. And we've got the youth hunt, trying to get more kids involved, try to have something for them. And it's not a strict license hunt where, you know, people is, you know how license hunt is. But anyway, it's just more, you know, trying to get more young people involved.
Good.
Then they'll auction off the ladies' dogs, and whoever comes in with the highest score that night will get part of the Calcutta money, but now they must have plus points, or the kids at St. Jude gets every dime.
I like that.
Yeah, me also. Yeah.
So you do put a little bit of edge on there, though, with that Calcutta and everything, where people can have That's a reason right. to pay attention and want to be part of it.
That's right. If, you know, whoever wins that Calcutta gets their portion of it, the rest of it goes to St. Jude. But like I said, if there's no coon treat, all of it goes back to St. Jude. And then the leading dog, the person, will get her a trophy and get recognized for that. And the kids, we have two divisions, 12 and under, 13 and over. And the winner of each division will get a jacket with an embroidered jacket with the St. Jude on the back of it.
With the actual St. Jude emblem on the back of it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
So when we get into the auctions and things that will be going on, I see on Saturday for certain there's going to be the auction that's held in the fairgrounds building. What kind of stuff is it, and what kind of auction is it? Like silent auctions, and what kind of things is it they're going to be able to go after?
No, we got auctioneers up on the stage. We run everything in front of you, stuff like quilts, dog food, light bars, cups, anything that we can get out and get the public or local people to donate comes to this auction. And anything that's donated, we're going to sell it. We got cleats for kids, ball cleats, chains. It's just too numerous of stuff to name it all. It's just odds and ends. People goes around to these local stores, and the local says, you know, can you donate us something? And they'll donate it, and we bring it up here and sell it.
Okay, so it's kind of like, if you will, and for a better name, a flea market type thing, but it is at an auction, on an auction platform.
Yeah, yeah, you don't never know what's in it. I mean, we never know from year to year. We've sold them smelting pots. You know, I didn't even know what that was till a man brought one up here and donated it to us.
I'm still not sure if I know what that is.
You pour diesel or coal oil or something on it and light it, and it's got a big chimney light, and and it burns afar, kind of like a fire pit, but it just burns.
I was envisioning something to make jig heads out of when I said that. I thought you were going to melt that down and make jig heads and put them on fishing hooks is what I was thinking, so... That's interesting.
I've got one man that's donated a car dolly this year, which is about a $2,550 item or better. And if you don't know what that is, of course, I was a little stumped when he ordered it. But, I mean, when he called and donated it, but it's a little dolly you pull behind your car, and you can pull another car up on that dolly and ratchet it down and pull that car behind your car.
So all the things you're mentioning here, it doesn't have to be somebody in the hound world or the coon hunting world to come and have a good time and find something they might want to put some money on. I've got a good friend whose dad, of all people, he'll spend some big money on quilts. You get him at an auction where there's some good quilts, he'll put big dollars down on it. So stuff like that, collectibles, is good.
Now, last year you had a quilt, if I'm correct, you had a quilt that was hand-stitched and everything and had an actual raccoon head on it. And it brought quite a bit of money, didn't it, Doug?
Yes, sir, it did. I can't remember exactly how much it is. And ever so often, like me, I collect my shirts from year to year. I've been here since 82. Ever so often, we'll gather up a bunch of shirts with different years on it. We'll take it to a lady that will put it together. I don't know whether they've got one this year or not. And she'll make a quilt out of them shirts.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And they usually bring pretty good.
So that's a lot of stuff going on. I'm going to stop you and ask you a question about that. You initially said you've been doing this since the early 80s. So obviously there's something about that, and you've got a reason that you've been willing to donate your time. What's made you stay with this so long? What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I had a friend that when we and him was in school in the 80s, he had this, and he was a patient. He's still a patient of St. Jude, because once you're a patient, even though you come an adult, you're still a patient of St. Jude, even though you're not a kid anymore. He has a number, and he is still a part of St. Jude. But we was real good friends, and he told me about this organization raising money for kids, and me and him was really, really close. And I got involved with him. And then later on, I had kids. I had one that had a little trouble. She didn't have to go to St. Jude, but how easy that could have been, you know. It just makes you that much more involved, and it's just stuff like that. Through the years, I've had other friends that's had kids that needs it, and it's my wife has family members that needed it back then, and it was so good for them. And I love kids, and it's just a part that I want to be involved in.
That's well said, but I just knew with you doing it this long, you have to believe in it, and and that's what we wanted to bring awareness to this from a hunting standpoint. You know, the coon hunters, they're good guys, and there's some good people out there. And like I said, our little local club that's just down the road, they raise money every year, and I think they drive the check out there when some of the members come to the hunt. And it's a good organization, and one of the things we wanted to do is bring some awareness. Even, you know, this is a big level. I mean, what you guys put on is large, but like I said, our little clubs here local does the same thing at a small level. Johnny just kind of had written down, and I let him kind of just read off. There's other clinics and stuff that are directly tied. They're part of it is St. Jude in other states, and for our listeners, we got out there. And I think you would agree with us on this. Anything's better than nothing. So if they raise $500, that would be $500 that's going to be going to a good cause.
That's exactly right. We have four local clubs. We got more than that, but we got four that has a big hunt every year, brings us in money. And I think you're talking about the one from Van Buren County.
Sir.
Which this year they're bringing us $6,200.
And see, that's good. So, I mean, that's a lot of money for a little local club to come up with.
And the Lawrence County Coon Hunters Club, not far from y'all. I mean, it's a little closer to us than y'all, but they're going to bring us like $5,300. We've got two clubs down in Alabama that always raises money for St. Jude, and they bring their money to us. One of them is $7,500. One of them's going to be $14,000 this year.
That's phenomenal.
So you just named off, you know, little local clubs that these guys and girls are getting together and going out and you know, on a Friday night, Saturday night hunt, and you just named off at least $25,000 that they've raised to make a difference.
$33,000.
So I mean, that's and that's what we wanted to bring up. That awareness to other clubs around the country that they could be doing some of this as well. So Johnny, real quick, just read off the other clinics there. I mean, if you're a listener and you've got a club in one of these states, start thinking about doing something like this.
Yeah. One of them that I've got wrote down here is, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Springfield, Missouri, Shreveport, Louisiana, Peoria, Illinois, Johnson City, Tennessee, Huntsville, Alabama, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Now, these are the list that I read off is clinics that are associated with St. Jude, and I'm sure that they get part of the money sometimes from this. But the reason why we wanted to name these states off is because I know there are several hunts in these states, and we'd like to encourage somebody that is a member or board member or something to do with a local coon club in some of these states to try to put on a hunt and get with y'all and get that money in to benefit all the clinics and the hospital in St. Jude's in Memphis.
like I said, with the amount of money you just read off that these local clubs put in, you put clubs in those other states, and it don't have to be in those states, any state, put something together. I'm sure, Doug, you guys would be happy to take that money. And like I said, you've been doing this so long, you've got a track record that's being used, the money's being used the way it's supposed to be used.
Yeah, we have turned in up till this year. We've not turned in none this year, but up till this year, we have already donated $5,702,000.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And there's no disputing that has changed a lot of lives.
Yeah. And we may not be the biggest hunt around here nowadays, but we still got our numbers up to where we can keep doing that every year so far. I hope it don't go down, because the kids they need it.
And as Johnny said when we started, we're starting to see again. It's kind of the coon hunting world's went in a kind of a phase. It went way down there for a long time. Not many people was going, but we have seen a good uptick in the amount of people that's coming out to these events. We had now, granted, we were at the tournament of champions preliminaries. Everybody's getting ready for that, but I mean, it was a big event, the one we went to. Johnny and I was over at 10 Mile, and there was hundreds and hundreds of people there. Kyle was up at Mount Gilead. I mean, they hunted 200 and something dogs there. So there's people that, with some of the things that the kennel clubs have got going on, they're getting an interest, and we want to just make sure that we bring some awareness to this, shift some of that interest, you know, over there. When you get an event like this, or you can put one together, be part of it and get involved with it.
And help change some kids' life. We talked about the guy that we done an interview with the other day. They still do they still carry on their life as close to normal as they can with the school resources they have, with the help with the housing and moving and the concierge and a lot of things that they do that people don't think about. I mean, they see the health part of it and the hospitalization part of it and the treatment part of it, but it goes a lot beyond that as far as living quarters, the concierge, helping to put these events together. They even have classrooms for, like I said, school and music rooms and a lot of things to keep these kids kind of occupied also, not just everything's doom and gloom. And that's one thing that I talked to a guy the other day. Well, it was actually last night. I was talking to a man, and he said, walk through two or three rooms of this, and you can't stand it without it bringing a tear to your eye. He said, but a lot of the kids are cheerful, they're happy. He said, and the experience and the staff is what makes them that way, to make them look forward to it.
Yes, sir.
What, have we got any other questions we want to ask? Or, Doug, have you got any things we might have missed that we need to put in there? And I do see one note that we was going to talk about that we forgot a minute ago. Tell the listener just a little bit about how much effort from the overall community. I mean, I know you've done talked about the women's hunt, the money they raised for the, and then the Calcuttas, and how long you've worked at it. But what about this just in general? How much this community bands together to put this event on?
Well, it takes longer than just showing up down here on a Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night than people really realize. We have a man that starts in January and goes from store to store. We have a couple of ladies that gets out and helps him go store from store. I've got four men moved in campers this past Saturday, and they won't leave till next Sunday, helping me put this thing together. And they come from a wide range of Lawrence County, Wayne County, Dyersburg. And they moved in here with their campers last Saturday, and they won't leave till Sunday, helping me get this thing going. People like that, I mean, and we have ladies that works on getting all this food in here. They work hours on hours, you know, and they need lots of recognition and help. But there's just no way that I can tell you how much a whole community has to pull pretty much all year long. I mean, we'll take about a 3 month or 4 month break from this when it's over, and then we'll go back at it for next year, because it just don't happen in a day. I mean, it takes lots of people. We've been branched out to Benton County and place around Bolivar, getting people to help out and joining our club. I guess you would call it. It's not really a club, but it's an organization. That's what it is. And we got people that comes, you know, a long way just to be part of it. And without them and our local people helping us get it all together, I don't know. I just can't tell you how valuable it is for our local.
Yeah, as far as the coon hunting aspect of it now, we covered a lot of the other stuff, the coon hunting aspect of it. You have a lot of, and I'm guessing a lot of your guides are voluntarily guiding to these places. Yep. To try to put people in good hunting and where they can score and score on coons and things of that nature. But that takes quite a bit of guides to put. I don't know how many dogs you hunted last year, but I know if you hunt 150 dogs, you got to have 40 guides to be able to put this thing on.
We probably hunted 100 dogs on Friday night, and I don't know, probably 60, 75 on Saturday nights. We usually fall off on Saturday nights because the ones that didn't win on Friday night, they'd rather stay and eat and listen to the entertainment as they had to hunt.
Well, you named off some pretty good
Saturday
stuff.
Night, we have a bang on Saturday night now. I mean, we do. And if they didn't do no good on Friday night, a lot of them would rather stay here and just have fun.
So, see, for all the coon hunters that would come down there to that, is because, you know, we got the tournament going on this week as well. There's only 96 that made that. They was, I think, well, how many tried, Kyle? 800? Roundabout is in that number? Around 800 people?
In total?
In total?
I think it was towards 1,400.
Well, I mean, if it went to the zones around, it may have been, I think it was 800 something, but nonetheless, my fast math, there's about 700 of us that was losers last week. So we could go out and to the St. Jude hunt. And like I said, if you get in on Friday, you can hunt Saturday. If not, you can just party and have a good time and enjoy yourself there Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, now it's two separate hunts. They can hunt Saturday night anyway. I mean, it's a separate hunt. We will have an overall and have a four dog runoff at the end of Saturday night, but the two hunts is actually two separate hunts. And just to get in the final four, you'd have to hunt both nights. But it's nothing that's licensed anyway. It's just more or less for the crown.
Yes, sir. No, right. And I just want to put that point out there to all of us hunters. There's a lot of people that could go. We should try to make it a point to get out there if at all possible.
Yeah, everybody needs this organization needs our support and our help. And it's a great benefit to that, not only that community, these people from all over the country that comes to St. Jude's in Memphis, all over the United States that comes there that benefits from the healthcare services and things that this hunt's helping pay for.
Yes, no matter where they're from, they don't get turned back.
Mm-hmm. We were absolutely blown away sitting down, you know, with his father last week, which is it's going to be part of this same segment, and letting him just tell us what they do. It was amazing, the things that they do.
Yeah.
Me personally, I've enjoyed it. Doug, I thank you again and all the hard work that goes into this thing, but we want to just bring some awareness to it. And again, thank you for just taking time out of your afternoon to spend a few minutes with us and talk about this.
Yes. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. Like I've said probably more than once since we've been doing this, you don't have to be a coon hunter, or you can be a coon hunter and just want to come see what's going on if you don't like traveling in the hunts, because we need the help for St. Jude. And I have traveled and coon hunted all my life, and I've been to all kind of world hunts, and there's no hunt like this, and I'm not saying it because I'm a part of it. You come down here and we got all these festivities going on during the day, all of it going on during the night. Yes, we have a coon hunt, but we have other stuff too that families would enjoy. Like a man coming to hunt, bring your wife and kids with you. They'll have fun while you're gone hunting.
Good deal. That's exactly right. So yeah, all the listeners take away from this, if there's any way you can get down to the St. Jude hunt, definitely be a part of it this week. It's going to be worth the time. It'll be fun. And again, that's going to be this coming week as we air this. It's going to be April the 11th, 12th, and 13th at the Decatur County Fairgrounds in Parsons, Tennessee. And Doug, again, thank you. And great organization and great cause this is being done working for.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Coon Hunting Media is proudly sponsored by Little T Squallers. Them are the words every competition hunter loves to hear. Your winning coon has just been found. Little T Squallers, owned and designed by Tim Tempton, has set the bar for high quality, dependable, and unmatched performance. From pleasure hunters to extreme competitors, he covers it all with his five elite models. Original Little T, the Triple Threat, the Double Shot, the Pro Series, and the newly designed Bell Ringer. If you want to enter the woods with confidence, contact his office at 423-562-5333 and become elite.
In addition to our official sponsors, we would also like to thank the following sponsors: Secret City Kennels. The kennel is owned by Mr. Mark Gettner and Mr. Wendell Jones. At Secret City Kennels, they support the English Coonhound breed. They have English Coonhounds for sale from time to time. Contact Mark or Wendell for all your English needs. They are available for your English Coonhound advice and are happy to answer your questions. These guys have done their fair share of winning in the comp events, including wins at the PKC Labor Day Classic, 5th place overall in the UKC World Hunt, 9th place in the AKC World Hunt, English Days, Winter Classics, and the list goes on and on. Mark is the current PKC English Coonhound President. Give either of these guys a call. They will be glad to talk with you. Their numbers are Mark at 931-787-2784. Or Wendell at 865-748-7795. They are located in Kingston, Tennessee and Coalfield, Tennessee.
Saddle Up Canine Cryo is owned by Mr. Bill Scheninger. Bill is located in Delta, Ohio. Don't miss out on the opportunity to keep that special stud dog forever. His services include semen collection, freezing, side-by-side shipping, and semen storage. Bill is also the owner of one of the best-known plot kennels in the country, Saddle Up Plots. Saddle Up Plots is home to UKC, PKC, AKC, WTDA, Grand Knight Champion, PR Saddle Up Lazarus. Lazarus accomplished the following accolades in 2021. He was UKC World Champ Plot, Plot Days Isaiah Kid Winner, Purina Breed Winner, Autumn Oaks Breed Champion, APA Breed Days Winner. Fresh chilled and frozen semen is available. Contact Bill directly for all pricing and services information for Canine Cryo and Saddle Up Plots. Bill's phone number is 419-467-7689. Saddle Up Plots, making plots rise again.
All right, everybody, we're back again. Thank you for listening to all of these interviews, and hopefully, after you've sat down and got to listen to but these two totally different aspects of what St. Jude's offers, you got to hear what St. Jude's does for an individual and their family, and then you've got to hear about the actual event that's coming up this weekend. We really want to, you know, hope and that you support the St. Jude's organization. We feel it's a good way to spend your money. We think the money's going to good causes. And as you've heard through these interviews, a lot of money has been raised and continues to be raised. And for us, I mean, it's coon hunters get a lot of bad rap in different aspects of the sporting good world and or sporting world. Not really all that bad of people. They are trying to do some good things, and we wanted to kind of bring that to light. But you know, more than anything, we wanted to showcase this St. Jude hunt and the cause it's actually raising money for, and a lot of money. I'll say that over and over. It's raised a lot of money over the years. A whole lot of lives have been touched and changed because of what has came out of this hunt out in Parsons, Tennessee. And I'd like to see it continue on for years to come. So hope you've enjoyed it. Hope it's been informative for you. And we'll get back into some of our normal redundancy or whatever we want to, or nonsense. That's what it is. We'll get back into our normal nonsense of the stuff that we do next week. But hope you do enjoy this one, and thank you for listening to us.